Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're enjoying your Saturday evening. It's 7 p.m., so that means it's time for me, Tim Andrews. You normally hear me Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 on the Von Hessler Doctrine, but I have a return guest. I love it when I have a return guest. We'll get to him in a second. The Frederick Brown Jr. Amphitheater in Peachtree City has just released all of their concerts for this summer. You can find them all at amphitheater.org. Ben Folds, Paper Airplane Tour, Saturday, June 1st. Sheila E., just in the news recently with the documentary about We Are the World, Saturday, June 22nd. The Alan Parsons Project, that's Saturday, June 29th. Air Supply and John Ford Coley. I believe this is Air Supply's last tour, but we'll find out if that's true or not. Saturday, July 20th. Yes, Epics and Classics featuring John Anderson and the band Geeks. That's July 27th. You got Jefferson Starship and the Wallflowers. Those are just some of the acts on this year's schedule. Joining me in studio this week is the lead singer of the band who kicks it all off from Electric Avenue and returning to the podcast, Kevin Spencer.
Hey, my friend.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Nice to see you again. It's been almost 2 years.
Isn't that crazy?
And you've probably been 9,000 places since that time.
Yeah, it's about 180 or 190 shows since I've seen you, which is just stupid when you think about it.
Well, yeah. Well, it's a way to make a living, I think.
Oh, we love it.
You enjoy what you do.
Indeed, yeah.
And I enjoy what I do, so that's a good thing. And everybody out there hopefully is entertained. It's an evening with Electric Avenue, the 80s MTV Experience, Saturday, May 11th. You're kicking it all off at the Fred. Have you played the Fred before?
We have, actually. In 2019, we did a gig there. They called us to see if we could actually do an opening slot for a Michael Jackson tribute. The documentary about Michael Jackson had just come out and ticket sales were tanking.
Okay.
So they put us on as the opening band to raise the stakes.
They were tanking because of the documentary?
I think there's a large part in, you know, I think I can't say that it wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
It certainly changed my view of Michael, even though he was a hero as a kid. It's difficult times.
It's hard, isn't it?
When you
grew up, I grew up and I had multiple facets of persona in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, pop fan, used to keep track of Casey Kasem and all those top 40 songs. And by the end of it, I was into metal. I loved Michael throughout all of that.
Yep.
And, you know, I still go back and listen to his songs. Do you think that we'll go all over the place, by the way. And I do encourage people to go back into the podcast feed and listen to the first interview because I want them to know you and
your
background. But are you one of those people that you can't listen and enjoy anymore if an artist has troubles?
Well, no, not if they have troubles. I think his troubles are certainly just a little more centric towards
other people's troubles.
Yeah,
causing them.
Actually. Yeah. That's a whole different thing. That comes with a weight to my soul. The music is still incredible. I still listen to the players. I still listen to the parts. I listen to the mixes.
Mm-hmm.
The person that is there is different for me.
Yeah.
So
it's a different thing. You're not going, oh, I miss Michael. But, you know, the song you can listen to in a way.
Yeah. And the magic of what was created on those records and the engineering and the playing and the guys from Toto that were playing on Thriller and such, right? Like, it's just incredible musicianship, incredible mixes. So we're certainly, you know, as musicians, we pull all that apart, but not involved in the other.
And Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Doing the guitar. He just showed up that day and did it.
Yeah, that's a crazy story too, because they were just, you know, trying to get him to do what he wanted to do, and he wasn't comfortable, and then it was like take two, as soon as Quincy said, just be you.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need you playing on the record, we need you to be Eddie Van Halen.
And isn't that interesting that we live in a world now where you can go to YouTube and find all these different channels with lots and lots of views, and these people are very, very smart, and they break things down. There's somebody local, Rick Beato said it right. He just did a breakdown of the Steely Dan song, Asia, from the album.
Yeah.
And I'd never listened to it that way before. I'd always liked it.
Yep.
But then he talked about how they had had all these drum parts recorded. And then some guy came in one day, and it was all sessions people.
Yep.
And the guy just laid down this track, and they just kept it. And now when I listen to that song, I'm trying to, like, I wish I had a mixer in my car so I could just listen to the drums.
Yeah, isn't it interesting, though, right? But I think that's the education part of music that musicians get into, and producers and engineers and people that are analytical about the music. But at one time you used to have to go to Berkeley or some other atypical school like that and pay a lot of money to get with a historian of music to get all those backstories. Now with the internet, it certainly opens it all up.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a beautiful side of the internet and technology, Tim, but I mean, for me on the music side, you know, the internet's a beautiful thing and it's wonderful, but it's also the harbinger of death for the music industry, or at least it was and still is to me.
It has damaged a lot of things. It's damamaged radio.
Yeah, 100%, without a doubt.
Yeah, we first thought it would be just satellite radio. Oh, well, there won't be much. It's just one thing. And now you have, well, Spotify and Apple Music, and people can make their own lists.
Yeah, I think there's a connection between what we do as Electric Avenue, the 80s MTV experience, and the missing experience that was radio when we were all growing up. You knew, I will say this, myself and Tom, our bass player, were just talking about this on a long drive home from Florida yesterday, from some gigs, and the song Spirit of Radio by Rush, the lyrics in that song typify exactly what it was like to be 16 through, 45 or 50 or whatever, 55, and just enjoying the radio. It literally describes the idea that you turn on the radio in the morning and you have a friend.
Yeah.
You have someone that wants to curate your morning, your day, the magic in the air coming out of this little box on your shelf. It's incredible. It was powerful. And I think that experience is what is large in part missing today. We're not sharing something with each other.
Right.
Everybody has their own playlist inside their car, but the power of pulling up to the street corner and realizing that there's two other cars that have the same radio station on that you do.
Yes.
You can look them in the eye and go, you get it.
Yeah.
I get it. This is awesome. Ready for the drum break? Here we go. And everybody looks at each other and does the Phil Collins drum break together.
Ba-bum, 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 ba-bum.
Yeah, yes. It's impossible to not be sitting at a stoplight as a kid and have look around and see people doing that. That is shared common experience of human expression, just through music and such. And to me, that's missing. And I miss the radio. I miss the person who was giving us voice, who is saying, I got to play these 10 top hits, but guess what? Here's a B-side, and it's awesome, and you haven't heard it yet. This band's called The Cars. And you're like, whoa, the radio station didn't get told by the record company to play that. That was this guy that loved the record and went deep and found a cut that he loved. And I miss that experience. Certainly an algorithm can give you some of that, but there's nothing
like a human connection.
No, not at all. And that's where I think we resonate with audiences, is because we're doing that. We certainly, in a show, will typically play 30 songs. Guaranteed 20 of them were number one hits. But the other 10, we're kind of cycling through stuff and catching people off guard and, just having some fun with it, where they're going. As an example, we were on a long road trip and we learned recently, Is This Love by Whitesnake. We've never touched any Whitesnake in this band. We're a new wave band for the most part, but we love that side of music. And that specific song is different than everything else in the Whitesnake catalog. But the look on people's faces when you get to the first chorus and they start to lean back a bit and bathe in it and go, I forgot how great of a song this is.
Yeah.
Every part, every harmony, every guitar harmony, the vocal, the lyric, all of it is so well constructed. That's missing in music today to me.
And if you're me, when I hear that, it brings back me in a car. Let's say specifically a Chevette.
Yep.
We're all driving around with a couple of friends, a couple guys and girls, and we're just driving around aimlessly on a Friday night listening to Whitesnake, Def Leppard, you name it from that era. Yep. Those are the two big albums from 87, for 87, the summer.
Hysteria?
Hysteria
for you?
And Whitesnake.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just nonstop over and over. Yeah, so was it hard to learn that song?
I'm not going to say it wasn't. A lot of the weight was certainly on Shannon, our guitar player, because the guitar harmony on that song is just pretty amazing for him to tackle it. So he and I had to kind of work through some parts backstage before we went out and played it. But we do things often baptism by fire. Mm-hmm. We'll spend a little bit of time considering it and listening to it as a band and talking about it. And we'll run it once or twice. And then it's just like, all right, it's in the set. Let's throw it to the wind tonight. And sometimes you fail, I mean, we didn't write these songs. We don't have ego in our performances. We don't have ego in the idea that we're something special or other. We're fans of the same records that our people that are coming to our shows are. We just happen to be the ones in the room that know how to play it, hopefully.
Yeah.
Right? That's the only difference. We all jumped up and down in our bedrooms to the same songs when we were kids. We're all congregating as fan and the guys in Electric Avenue as a family, enjoying this music and enjoying the things that we feel are missing from society today. That's the part that we're selling, is just the importance of music and celebration and people and how it all glues together.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really important part of the process to us.
And looking out into an ever-increasing size of people that are out there to hear you play those songs, not only loving those songs, but loving the performance that you're providing for them.
Yeah, we take stock and we take weight in that, my friend. We certainly do, but only in the accuracy of getting it right and the connection to the people.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about radio and some of the other things that I have on my list right here that you can't see. Kevin Spencer, the name of the band is Electric Avenue, and they are kicking off the entire summer lineup at the Frederick Brown Jr. Amphitheater in Peachtree City, affectionately known as the Fred. And you can find out tickets and information at amphitheater.org. The date of your show is Saturday, May 11th. You're listening to The Popcast with Tim Andrews on 95.5 WSB. Is this love? Welcome back to the podcast with Tim Andrews on 95.5 WSB. My guest in studio, Kevin Spencer. The name of the band is Electric Avenue. Oi! I wanted to do that. I didn't do it last time. I was less confident than I am now. It's an evening with Electric Avenue, the 80s MTV Experience, Saturday, May 11th. And in the last segment, we were talking about how different radio is now from when you and I grew up. Now, you grew up in Canada. I grew up in north central Pennsylvania, south central New York. It's called the Twin Tiers. I imagine a lot of it was the same, a lot of the same artists on the radio. And there was niche, radio. There was country. There was so-called urban, which I hate that name of that format. I hate a lot of the names.
Yeah.
News Talk is nice, and that's an easy one. That's what we are. And I embrace and fully support that one. The Top 40 radio then, that was the type of radio it was, but there was all different kinds of music on it. So we grew up being exposed to a lot of different things. And I think that's kind of lost now. And then another part of that was, sure, the company that owned the radio station, or certainly the programmers, made the playlist. But I started out in the late 80s being a disc jockey.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't very compelling for me to do that, but I did it because I loved the music. And picking songs that were in between those were mine. And so I would try to make it my own show. So every disc jockey back then, if they were good, tried to make it their own show. And those people that were coming to you live, like in the spirit of radio from Rush, which we also talked about, they were sort of celebrities or stars.
Oh, yeah.
And just as much as the music. You don't hear that much anymore.
No, because it's a profit-driven bean counter that's running a spreadsheet that knows how many people signed off from the radio when such and such song was put on, and then the advertising dollars are attached to it. So a lot of the music we get today is basically, to me, is no different than Coca-Cola or Pepsi or another brand. It's a marketed, created thing, and it's come up through the ranks, whether it's through the kids come up through Disney and then they keep them going, and then they put song farmers around them, and then there's producers. Those kids aren't writing their own songs.
Mm-mm.
And they're being told what to do, and that way, when you're being told what to do, you know, they're kind of controlled in that sense. You wouldn't have gotten a Prince Rogers, you know, coming out of the late 70s and early 80s if someone was telling him what to do.
No.
That wouldn't have happened. You would never have heard Let's Go Crazy if he was being told what to do.
And he was the kind of guy that didn't want to be told what to do.
That's the point, right? Like, that's most of the people that we all grew up with that we loved. That was part of the attraction, I think.
Right.
That was the coolest thing about turning it on and seeing someone like Edward Van Halen that was breaking all the rules. He's breaking the rules because he wants to, not because someone's telling him to.
Right.
Because that's what our youth kind of is. And, you know, we can't lose sight that a lot of us have kids these days, and kids are trying to push their boundaries and have fun with it and step out of the lines a little bit. And that's what music is. And that's what it was. It's about making sure that it's like a sheep herder, right? When you're trying to raise kids, you're just trying to keep them inside the lines as best you possibly can, but the kid's still going to be who they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And music is supposed to give us who that person is. It's not supposed to give us a script of what we think we're supposed
like
to be.
You will like this.
Yeah.
Well, I feel bad now because I'm trying to force my son to like the Beatles. No, I play tons of different stuff for him.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that there's a difference between education
mm-hmm.
and telling there's no reason why we can't play kids great records. That's what our job is to make sure our kids know the great records. They will, hopefully, if we give them enough music education as young people, we will get them to a position where they will have taste. You can't buy taste.
No.
You have to have taste developed. You don't walk a kid into a sushi restaurant and expect they're going to know everything on the menu. You got to walk them through it and teach them what that is or what or certain junk foods they shouldn't eat. That just comes from exploring. It's the same thing for music. Don't go listen to that because that's drivel. Yeah. If you say that to a kid, they're going to go listen to it. But if you take them to the good music and you say, hey, don't listen to this record by Tears for Fears. It's called Songs in the Big Chair. I don't know if you'd really like it. It might be over your head.
Uh-huh.
You know, that kid's going to put it on and be like, it's not over my head. I got this. Next thing you know, they're going to be singing back, you know, some of the greatest lyrics from that record at you. So I think that's the part that we just have to focus on. It's just even people that are bringing their kids to our concerts, we're watching kids sing along to every word of a song. I'm staring at them and they know every word as well as I do. And this kid is not even 15 years old yet. That's either great parenting or they watch Stranger Things.
Yeah. It'll start you off on one or two songs.
Yep.
And then here's where the algorithm comes in.
Yeah.
Algorithm will kick out a bunch of other 80s songs.
Truth.
And so that in some ways is a good thing.
It is. And it is.
There's a classic rock. We have one right down the hall. I think that's probably one of the best ones in the country. And I'm not just saying that.
No, I love
The River.
Yeah, so do I. And Nick's one of the greatest hosts, too.
Oh, English Nick?
Yeah,
absolutely. Hey, kids! I love English Nick.
Me too.
But you can put that station on. And we had to go to a break here real quick. But The River, to me, is what Fox 97 was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
If you're in a bad mood, put this on. And that bad mood will evaporate as you're singing along to every single song that you're hearing.
Indeed.
All right, we're going to come back. A couple more segments with Kevin Spencer. The name of the band is Electric Avenue, and we haven't really talked much about that, have we? We're going to. An Evening with Electric Avenue, the 80s MTV Experience, Saturday, May 11th at the Fred. For tickets and information, go to amphitheater.org. You're listening to The Popcast with Tim Andrews on 95.5 WSB. Welcome back to the podcast on 95.5 WSB. My guest, oh, by the way, I'm Tim Andrews. My guest, Kevin Spencer from Electric Avenue, the 80s MTV Experience. He just told me an interesting little tidbit. Now, they are going to be kicking off the Frederick Brown Jr. Amphitheater. What is that called? It's the concert series. I don't know if I can name the sponsor because they might not sponsor us. So maybe I won't. But
Indeed.
It's at the Fred. And you can find all the information at amphitheater.org. It's pretty cool that they got that because there's a lot of amphitheaters. But your first show is Saturday, May 11th, but that's not when your tour starts. When does your tour start?
Our tour doesn't even end.
It doesn't end. So
no.
You're still on tour 24/7.
Yeah, it's about 100 shows a year right now. Mm-hmm. We're coming up on 1,100 shows. We're just shy of 1,110 and a half years, which is crazy amount of work.
You think?
Yeah.
But you love it, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't apply for the job if you don't want to take it. And if you get the job, don't complain.
So in 2023, you did 92 shows, 24 states, 52,378 miles traveled, and almost 74,000 people entertained. That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You met interesting people on the road. You met Charles Barkley, although that might have been this year.
It was. Yeah, it was just recently. There was a guy named Jay that's been coming to our shows for years, and we've had some great conversations. And when he tells me, oh, man, my buddy Charles, can't wait for him to see your band.
And you didn't know?
No. And then he was saying, oh, man, Charles and I were having drinks the other night, and we were watching you guys on YouTube again. And then the next time I see him, he tells me the same thing. And then you find out that it's Charles Barkley, and he walks backstage. It's a little...
How you guys doing?
Yeah. Terrible.
Terrible. You know, I love that music you guys play. I love 80s.
He's the nicest guy in the world.
I imagine he is.
Yeah.
I've only met him twice.
Yeah, he just doesn't pull punches, super kind.
Mm-mm. I saw him buying lottery tickets at the Exxon down the street once.
What does he need the lottery money for other than charity, right? Like,
yeah, I think he just likes donating to the education fund.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And
yeah.
If he happens to win a little money, why not?
Heard.
And one time he was coming out of the gym over at Ansley. And I've told this story before, but it always makes me laugh. I had a BMW that I hated, and I was just too expensive. And I never cleaned it or anything. And he was walking. He was parking next to me. And I said, Charles Barkley, man, I'm a big fan. He goes, clean your car, dude. That's all he said. But you told me during the break that you're going to be busy tonight practicing and learning REM songs because on, well, on Thursday, May 2nd, you are playing with Mike Mills of REM.
Yeah, which is pretty amazing and wonderful and daunting all at the same time. It just, when you grow up listening to someone's music, I think that there's always a little bit of weight associated for us and always getting the details right. But when you're playing with those people, that's a little different. You know, I've never met Mike before. We're actually supposed to hop on a call later on today.
How did that come about?
A mutual friend and the promoter that's involved with the show. He's he knows him and he's done some shows with him before. And so he put it before him and showed him some videos and such and said, this is the band. And he was like, hell yeah, let's do this.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But like a good Southern guy, he said, we can't talk until Monday because I need to make sure that I'm focused on watching the Masters all weekend. So
really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's Mike's cool. A huge golfer.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
How many members... Well, how many other members of bands and stuff have you played with? And what surprised you the most?
I think Bobby Kimball from Toto was probably the most surprising because I was expecting him to be more of the guy I thought he was. And all he wanted to do was talk about his wife's dog shelter and magic tricks.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just exploding pen stuff and yeah, just not exactly what I thought it would be. But
that's funny.
Yeah. Certainly singing songs like Africa and Rosanna with him was certainly one of those benchmark moments as a singer. But yeah, we've been very lucky with some of the guys that have jumped on stage. But again, Mike Mills to me, kind of personally is just
iconic, right?
Yeah, it's the one for me.
REM's our wheelhouse.
It is. And I still remember, I can literally tell you, I was literally walking through the schoolyard listening to a Walkman that a buddy of mine had lent me a tape, and I was holding the hands of a girl named Shelley Tyrone and all of a sudden I push play and he goes, dude, check this out, and he gave me his headphones and I started walking with Shelley. We were walking home and the song comes on and I remember hearing it start and he goes, I am Superman, and I was like, holy
shit. That's Mike singing, right?
Yeah. So like the idea of doing that song, the first REM song I ever heard, doing that with him it's magical.
That is.
I cannot say
so
it in any
that
other
is
word.
Literally the first REM song you ever heard.
I heard, yeah.
And that's Document, right?
Yep.
Wow. I heard Don't Go Back to Rockville.
Uh-huh.
On a college radio station. Again, I grew up in a very tiny little town. Yeah. Everything was pop, you know, top 40, whatever. And but we did have a college station.
Yep.
And it was really representative of the makeup of the college, too, because people came from Philly, Jersey. So there was all sorts of interesting things on there. One or two kids would play alternative music. And the first time I heard that song, I fell in love with it. I had no idea who they were.
Yeah.
But
so Rockville is actually in the conversation to be played. We're doing it Thursday, May 2nd to kick off Kentucky Derby up in Louisville. And so that's one of the songs that's actually in conversation but might be in the set. So
any others?
Well, there's some conversation about that one. There's some conversation about, obviously Superman, Losing My Religion. What else has been, maybe Frequency Kenneth, you know, there's some really great songs.
That's probably going to be a hard song to learn.
I think all of their stuff is hard from the perspective of they are and were one of the most idiosyncratic art rock bands in our history. Everything that informed REM, it's not that any one specific part is this incredible performance, or I shouldn't say it that way. I mean, like, it's not Steve Perry Journey screaming at the top of his lungs at the top. You know, it's not that. It is, how does the oddities and beauty of every single one of these little puzzle pieces fit together to make something you've never experienced before?
Right.
That's what's special. So we have to get into the nitty-gritty of what made each instrument's performance special and how do they glue it together? Because this is not a Pro Tools record. This was not sewn together by a computer. This was men in the studio working on art.
Yeah.
And that's something you have to catch up. You have to get the Polaroid of it. You can't get the JPEG.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yeah. You have to be able to dive in and look and hold it in your hand and be able to figure it out.
That's it. Yeah.
You can't just download it.
No.
No.
No, you can't download those. And they're Michael and Mike, Michael Stipe and Mike Mills, their vocals, just the way that they blend and the way that they kind of come together. It's certainly a beautiful thing.
I like both their vocals. I loved Michael Stipe's. one of the things I wish would happen someday, and who knows, probably won't, but maybe it will, is that they do a couple of shows or they get together again and perform live.
So my wife and I were actually just talking about that recently. There was my old boss joined. My old boss, Daniel Lemoine, produced a lot of the U2 records. Mm-hmm. And so he joined them for the final night of the Sphere. And Christy looked at me that night, just before it happened. She said, we heard it was happening through the grapevine, through friends, that he was going to be joining. She said, do you want to go? I said, I can't. I'm on stage. We started talking about the Sphere. And she said, who do you think would be the one band that you'd love to see go to the Sphere that would be big enough to sell it out? And I said, hands down, R.E.M.
Oh, yeah.
If R.E.M. get back together, that place will be sold out for a month, just like it was with U2.
Yep.
And I think the other band, I think, that would be able to do that and would cause a frenzy on the planet would be if Oasis would go back and play.
Oh, those two getting together and playing there?
I would say just back to back. I'm not saying together because that would just be a fist fight.
But, yeah. Well, maybe they could put their differences aside.
Yeah, yeah.
For the
yeah.
audience.
Indeed.
I wouldn't go there. Just simply whatever. I don't have principles or anything. I just know me. But I would love to go see them at Lakewood.
Yeah, yeah, I hear that. Yeah.
I've seen them so many times, and I miss seeing them live. I saw them with Wilco.
Oh, yeah.
They were doing they did Chastain together. And just back to back, both of those bands who I love, you know, loved one first, loved the other second. And Atlanta is so many great musicians and artists from this entire state. But Atlanta, Kevin Kenny, Driving and Crying.
Yeah.
Joey Huffman. Do you know Joey Huffman?
I know that name.
The keyboard player. I just interviewed him a couple weeks ago. He was with Soul Asylum when they did their the inaugural ball for Clinton. He was with. He toured with Hank Jr. I mean, just so many different bands he's performed with.
Yeah,
Atlanta's Satellites and stuff.
Atlanta's covered with some really great producers and writers and stuff. Obviously Pete Stroud and Tim Smith and the rest of those guys that are pretty close to our family of friends, but they're still gods to me. I'm friends with a lot of my people that I look up to, but I think it's really important as a musician to make sure that you keep your heroes intact and keep looking up to your friends that are better players than you. For me.
Yeah, well, you learn.
Yeah. I mean, everybody in the band Electric Avenue are better players than I am. I'm certainly the weakest player in the band. And I say that hands down. They're all such monsters. They just let me be the front man.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, they're all great players.
You do collaborate with Christian Bush from Sugarland.
Yeah.
What is that? What do you do with Christian Bush?
You know, man, again, it's just a musicianship friend thing, right? It's just sometimes you get a phone call from a friend and they say, we're in a studio and we're cutting a track. We think you'd be perfect for this. And you drive down to the studio, you walk in with your instruments, and you walk out an hour later and you've put something down. You know, that's kind of where it started with Christian and doing some live gigs with him and playing on records.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's so much fun.
He's a good dude.
I have so many more questions. We could probably talk all afternoon, but this is a radio show, and so we're subjected to having to play commercials.
Indeed.
Can you stick around for one more segment?
Indeed.
All right. Kevin Spencer, the name of the band, Electric Avenue, the Frederick Brown Jr. Amphitheater in Peachtree City. Go to amphitheater.org. You can find out all the shows. Electric Avenue kicks it all off on May 11th, which is a Saturday. You got Ben Folds, Alan Parsons Project, who I saw about a year ago with Dr. Joe, actually 2 years ago. Air Supply, everything. The Wallflowers, Air Supply, all on one stage all year long. So go check it out. It's the Popcast with Tim Andrews on 95.5 WSB. Relax, don't do it when you want to go to it. Welcome back to the podcast. One more segment with my guest, Kevin Spencer from Electric Avenue. Kevin, you told me during the break that when you told your father that you wanted to be a singer, he gave you some very solid advice. What was that?
He did. He sat me down, and I'll never forget, it was in the living room with that big turntable, you know, the ones that had, you could put the records in the one side or whatever.
Was it like that big console thing where
100%.
You lifted it up?
Yep. Yeah. Lift the top up, and the one on the right-hand side were like all the albums lined up.
That's when people didn't move a lot.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, you're not wrong. And my dad was thumbing through there, and he pulled out Frank Sinatra's Greatest Hits and put it down, and he pulled out News of the World by Queen, and he said, if you can get Frank and Freddie down, you're going to be just fine.
So your dad liked both of those?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That means he's well-rounded musically.
Yeah.
My mom would have handed me Bobby Vinton, Elvis, and the Letterman and said, go have fun.
Yeah, I think my dad just knew that there was something else, you know, he just appreciated some rock and roll, you know. I think he just had, my dad was a bit of a badass, I think, when he was a kid. Now I've heard years later from family members, he was a trouble starter.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, oh, it's great.
It's funny, the records I discovered in my grandparents' basement, because they would have these little parties down in their basement, And I found all sorts of stuff, that Clarence Carter, which you wouldn't expect because my granddad, I just thought he liked old country music from the 50s. But yeah. No, they had tons and tons of stuff. And my dad liked a little bit of the outlaw country. Again, my mom, not so much. I asked her one time why she only had Meet the Beatles and Hard Day's Night, and she said, they got weird.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you got to understand, though, back then, though, they were making pretty big leaps and bounds, right? From mm-hmm. I Want to Hold Your Hand to 5 years later, they even reinvented music.
Yeah.
Right? Now we listen to it, but you forget that one of the greatest bands of all time being the Beatles, like that era that they were together, what was it, like 7, maybe 8 years from the start to the finish of all of it?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
And everything that they put out.
Oh, it's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Do you have any desire to, you know, make a band or to collaborate with other people and go on tour or get music out there that's entirely yours?
Yeah, you know, we talk about it all the time. In fact, we've all done that for years.
Yes.
And that was part of our MO. In fact, I just found out a year and a half ago that our guitar player, Shannon, he never told me. I've been playing music with the guy for 15 years, and he played on Boys to Men too. One of the largest selling albums of that decade, if
really?
Not largest, yeah. And he's like, I don't know, it was one day in my life. I was like, well, you should have a 10 times platinum album on your wall. He was like, nah. He's just more interested in going out and getting some vegetables and coffee.
And he likes to perform.
Yeah,
and that's
loves
more
it.
Important.
He loves the music. He doesn't give a shit about the rest of it, right? That's something I love. He just doesn't care about the rest of it at all. The interesting part about music is that you just, the landscape of people that you meet and the stories, and it's all a fabric. It connects together. Touring is like that for us. We start recalling dates and stuff. We just came back from a run through Texas and through Lubbock and Dallas and Houston. We didn't stop in Austin this time, but the stories that start coming up and the memories, and as you're driving through territories and, oh, we haven't been back here for a year and a half. Oh God, you remember when, right? Like that's the stuff that really ignites a band. And some of those conversations lead to, hey, we should write about that.
Yeah.
Right? So certainly we're all writers, we're creatives. There are conversations going on. The hardest part for us is finding time. Because when we get home to our families, we literally have about 3 days to see our families, and then it's turn and head back out to another state.
You would almost need an extended break from touring to be able to do that.
100%.
Because you got to be focused on that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. During COVID, I was writing a lot, right? Because we were trapped in our homes, and I was just carving up songs and such. And I've written for other people. Almost had a song on Daughtry's album not long ago, and a few other people that have been writing for. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to, we have to find what suits us for Electric Avenue. So we haven't put on a suit jacket of a song yet that mm-hmm. felt proper for us right now.
But when you do, it'll happen.
Yeah.
And that's the magic of it, right?
Oh God, yeah. Yeah. It's in the cards because it's in the ether.
Yeah. And until that time, though, thousands and thousands of people sitting out in an audience watching you guys perform some of the greatest music ever recorded.
It's incredible. And I will say, anybody that wants to come to the Fred on Saturday, May 11th, do not wait to get your tickets, because we're very lucky that in the first 2.5 weeks, tickets have been on sale. The first nearly 2,100 have sold. So there's only about 400 tickets left before the amphitheater is sold out.
Did you hear that? Only 400 tickets left. Make sure you go get them right now. Ben Folds, do you play any Ben Folds on your shows?
Too
new, right?
Yeah. He's a nice guy, though.
I'm sure he is. Sheila E., Alan Parsons Project. What did he do in the 80s? Asia?
Eye in the Sky.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. He did his own stuff, not Asia.
Yeah.
Air Supply, of course. Do they fall on Electric Avenue?
They don't, because there's just so much great music from the 80s, Tim.
They're too vanilla, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're great. I love those
amazing.
Songs.
Amazing.
But not like a, hey, all right, get the crowd going kind of song.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can paint stuff like that in. You can always do that, but we just haven't gotten there. Let's just say that.
Starship, you could play, what was there? We Built This City.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those songs that it's so good, but it's also just, no.
Kevin, thank you for coming in.
Of course, man.
All right. We're going to wrap it up here. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, everybody. If you're looking for these tickets, you better get them soon. Go to amphitheater.org and find the tickets, Electric Avenue, the 80s MTV Experience, Saturday, May 11th. Don't go away. Milani Kai is next, followed by what comes up at 11 o'clock? Oh, yeah, it is the, what do I call it? It's Jared Yamamoto's show. Oh, yeah, the Nightcap with Jared Yamamoto. Have a good weekend.